Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen. I'm super excited to have this edition of our program for you. When I can find experts that will help us understand things that are financial, boy, we hunt them down. We look for the best ones we can get because I know you don't want to hear just David talk for a whole 30 minutes. I don't mind listening to my voice, but even I get tired of hearing myself. So we're not going to do that. And we're going to continue to bring you great guests. And I've got one lined up for you, Elizabeth Collins. And she is Director of Equity Research North America, Morningstar. The book she wrote, Why Moats Matter, The Morningstar Approach to Stock Investing. And the website is morningstar.com. And I am very happy to welcome Elizabeth to the program. Elizabeth, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
I am very happy to have you. I'm a big fan of Morningstar. I've been working with your company for over 20 years. We have our current subscription to the Advisor Workstation. We use your software every single day and have used it to help people understand a lot about how their portfolios work, the costs, and how they're allocated. And we use it ongoing for our client portfolios that we manage. I am a fan of Morningstar.
Great to hear it.
But I am very curious to learn more about moats, and we'll get into that. Let me finish properly introducing Elizabeth. She is a chartered financial analyst. That's CFA. It's kind of like a CPA of investments. She is a director of equity research for North America for Morningstar, responsible for leading the firm's team of North American-based equity research analysts. That is a lot to keep track of, I'm sure. Before assuming her current role, she was chair of Morningstar's Economic Moat Committee, which we'll get to in just a second. She has done analyst work and been heavily involved with the company since 2005. So we are very happy to have her. And we discovered that Elizabeth and I have a shared passion of cycling. And we were talking before we went on the air about our cycling and how we do that. And if you're not clipped in, you're just an amateur, right, Elizabeth?
That's right.
That's right. All right. So, first, let's do this. You have this terminology referring to moats. So for our listeners, let's get into what moats are about and why it matters. And we'll kind of drill down a little bit and discuss it. So share with us, Elizabeth, about the moats and what that means.
Sure. Let's start with what a moat is. So if you think about castles in medieval times, they had moats that protected them from enemy incursions. And now we have economic entities or castles, and they too need to be protected from competitors. And the idea is that a moat is a sustainable competitive advantage, something structural inherent to the company that allows them to keep competitors at bay for extended periods of time.
Well, that makes sense. I expected it to be a more complicated thing than that. That's very straightforward. And so part of what you're with your book, Why Moats Matter, The Morningstar Approach to Stock Investing, you lay out kind of a framework for finding and identifying companies, businesses that have these moats.
We do. It's a simple concept, but it's really hard to execute when you actually get down to the nitty-gritty of finding companies that have these economic moats. So we slice and dice it in a variety of ways. In the book, Why Moats Matter, we look at what types of sources of competitive advantage there are out there, such as intangible assets, which are brands and patents. Other things can be network effect, cost advantage, efficient scale, customer switching costs. We also look at what it means to have a moat on an industry-by-industry basis.
Interesting. So it could come in a lot of different shapes and sizes and structures. And so to find these, I mean, this is a cornerstone of Morningstar approach to stock investing. To find these, are there tools that people can leverage that allow them to do this efficiently and, you know, leverage work that's already been done, not have to recreate the wheel?
It really depends on how much time an individual has to invest in the process of stock picking. So if they want to do it themselves, then my advice is to read the financial reports that the company puts out, listen to the conference calls, do the same for the company's competitors, and really figure out what the future will look like for the company. Because at the end of the day, the job of a stock picker is to predict the future, to value the future, and to identify opportunities when the market has a different view of the future than you do. So if you're going to do it by yourself, it means that you have to really know the companies and develop a forecast for the future.
Mm.
If you want to allow others to do it for you, obviously there's things you can do. You can invest alongside portfolio managers at mutual funds.
Right.
You can do it yourself a little bit with Morningstar Equity Research, which is available, as you mentioned, through advisors as well as our Morningstar.com. We have the book, Why Moats Matter. And that gives the book really gives people guidelines for how we think about moats. So it's really kind of like it could serve as an internal training manual for Morningstar equity analysts.
Okay.
But it's also a useful desk reference manual for practitioners of stock picking that are out there that aren't at Morningstar.
Okay, well, that makes sense to me. And I thought of an example that may, and you can tell me if I'm on the right track here. We all know that Amazon is experimenting with the whole drone technology. And so let's say tomorrow they announce, hey, by the way, guys, we're a lot farther along than everybody thinks we are. The aviation folks have approved it and we're ready to rock and roll. We're going to start doing shipments next week. That would be a moat. That would be an incredible competitive advantage for that company.
Well, what we see at Amazon is that it has a wide economic moat due to a cost advantage.
Okay.
And a network effect.
Okay.
And so those are the things that are really going to be sustainable over the long run and that are going to be incredibly hard for others to replicate. And to the extent that what you just mentioned could enhance those competitive advantages, then it would be a good thing. But one important thing to note is that first mover advantage in and of itself does not mean sustainable competitive advantage.
Okay, that's a good distinction. That's a very good distinction. Thank you. That's why I wanted to use that as an example to see if it held water, no pun intended, with mm-hmm. your moat, because you could get the jump. And of course, Apple is another great example of getting that innovative jump and then having other competitors come in. And so what you spoke to is in terms of identifying the moat that relates to Amazon or the price competitiveness and how they have their distribution, and because they may get the temporary boost of that drone technology and delivery, but other competitors could come in and do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Interesting. Oh, that's cool. That's very interesting. All right. Well, that's a good way to view it. Elizabeth Collins, ladies and gentlemen, if you're just joining us and we're talking about moats, and I'm learning as you are a little bit more about some of the approach, why moats matter, the Morningstar approach to stock investing. Morningstar.com. We'll be right back with Elizabeth in just 1 second. Stay right there.
When it comes to finding an advisor you can trust, are you unsure of the questions to ask? David Holland has written a book that can help, and it's called How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams. David has crammed his experience and insider knowledge about advisors and how they operate into this popular book. Visit Amazon.com to order your copy today. Or if you'd like to meet one-on-one with David to discuss your financial goals and concerns, he'll give you a free copy of his book when you meet. There's no cost or obligation. The number to call for your appointment with David is 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Elizabeth Collins, CFA, Chartered Financial Analyst, Director of Equity Research, North America, Morningstar. The book, Why Moats Matter, The Morningstar Approach to Stock Investing, and Morningstar.com is the website. And, you know, if we could, Elizabeth, I want to go back to something from before the break when we talked about the drilling down and finding companies and doing your research and leveraging other people who do that for you, be it portfolio managers or a mutual fund or whatever the case may be. Part of that, you made the comment, I want to expand on if we can, because I think it's really important, is the predicting or the setting the expectation and making predictions about the future. Now, how do we kind of juxtapose that with the difficulty of predicting the future? How do we reconcile that? Is it saying, look, you go back to the example of Amazon as a company. Hey, look, these moats they have, we really believe that that's going to translate to sustained competitive edge. Is that the form of a prediction, or do we have to get more specific about our predictions on the company?
Well, at Morningstar and in the sell-side equity research business, you know, the analysts that are out there putting out their price targets or fair value estimates mm-hmm. for companies that you might have available, and you might have those research reports available through your broker or your advisor, equity analysts have to get very specific about their forecast for the
okay.
future. So
okay.
the commodity, you know, the oil and gas team and the basic materials team have commodity price forecasts and production forecasts that help them decide what their company's future earnings potential is. The healthcare team goes into predicting what pipeline success will be for the pharmaceutical companies, what the addressable market is for what the, you know, how many sick patients there could be out there and what the drug's pricing power can be. And really, it's to create a full financial statement forecast. Now, an individual investor, if you see a company trading for, say, a PE multiple of, say, 8 or 10 times, and you know that the company is going to grow, or you have a confidence in your forecast that the company can grow much faster than the overall market for several years or more, maybe that's all you need to do in terms of forecasting the future. It doesn't have to be specific. You can just say, hey, this company is trading for a low earnings multiple, lower than the market, and we think that they're going to grow faster than the market. This is an investing opportunity. Okay. So there is a wide range of how specific you can be in terms of forecasting the future. Obviously, we think that if this is going to be your full-time job, it helps to be specific and thorough because, as you know, sometimes the devil's in the details.
Almost always. Well, and so on that point, and that this is where, again, it's a lot for somebody to do as an individual. And of course, as you well know, Elizabeth, building a portfolio that is insulated to as much as it can be, or to at least to a significant degree against the individual risk of companies affecting the overall portfolio. We need diversification. So we're talking about a task that really needs to be multiple companies in a portfolio. And this is where, of course, there's the efficiency of hiring a portfolio manager or a mutual fund. And so, I mean, isn't this some of this what we're talking about? Isn't this the job of that small cap stock portfolio manager for a mutual fund? That's their job to do this with small cap stocks, or this is the job of the technology sector fund. That's the job of what they're supposed to do with that specific investment objective.
Right. We're really talking about what is the math of how much time people can invest in the research of their investment.
Right.
And if you figure at Morningstar and at other equity research shops, industry experts are spending all their time covering, say, 15 companies plus the professional resources that they have at their fingertips. And portfolio managers are leveraging the information that they get from their equity analysts and having a portfolio of probably, well, more than 20 companies in their portfolio. So that's really how the math begins to
add up.
You know, if an individual investor is looking to have, you know, one holding, sure, they can really dig into the details. But doing it at scale is another matter.
Yeah. So you've got to be practical here. And of course, this is what I'm doing every day when working with my clients, Elizabeth, is we're leveraging that research is being done by other folks because, it, you know, to try to do all of that, it's a daunting task. But it's helpful for people to understand where all this comes from, which is why I like the resource of your book, Why Moats Matter. Because, you know, to build out the portfolio, I mean, I for example, when we build our portfolios, we're using 10, 12 or so no-load mutual funds and exchange-traded funds, and we're building that portfolio, again, using your software. We're able to go in and get all the specific details and calibrate that portfolio for the asset allocation I want. And then we're leveraging that those managers are doing that the research that we need to each of them to do for their specific areas to get the scale we need to deploy those assets efficiently.
Yep, I agree.
Okay. I mean, we're on the right track with it. This is helpful for our listeners to understand this, because I think a lot of times people say, maybe I can do this myself, or maybe some people can. But it's a lot to leverage. And now this will just be kind of a, for our listeners, maybe people that aren't as aware, how can people, if they want to take advantage, you talk about your team of researchers and equity researchers, can they find a lot of these resources and leverage these types of efficiencies through Morningstar? They can go to the website. Is there a specific area they should look to do that?
Sure. And so I apologize in advance for what will be the commercial section of this interview, but here's me promoting my business.
That's okay. I threw the softball. Go ahead.
Okay. So we have Morningstar.com, and we have the stock section of that where you can get access to our analyst reports for the 1,500 companies that we cover. And you get our moat ratings and our fair value estimates and our star ratings. We also have the Morningstar Stock Investor and Morningstar Dividend Investor newsletters, which together include 4 model portfolios, and you can invest alongside those portfolio manager / newsletter editors, Josh Peters and Matt Kofina, get their stock ideas and read each week and each month what they're doing and how they think about the markets and the companies in their portfolios. We also have the Morningstar Wide Moat Focus Index, which is based on our analyst research as the portfolios that I mentioned are, but the Wide Moat Focus Index is a combination of high-quality companies that are also trading at a discount to our fair value estimate, or what we think the companies are truly worth.
Okay.
That's rebalanced and reconstituted quarterly, equally weighted. There is an exchange-traded fund, ticker MOAT, that accesses the Morningstar Wide Moat Focus Index.
Oh, that's very cool. Yeah, I love that wide moat. That's really cool. Let's make that, we want those the widest moat possible. And, you know, I know that the from a research standpoint, determining these economic moats for companies got some different sources of competitive advantages. And what I'd love to do, if we could, Elizabeth, is we'll grab a quick break. We'll come back. And I want to dig in a little bit specifically on some of those a little bit further and help our listeners understand where some of this is coming from. So hold right there. We'll be right back with Elizabeth Collins, CFA, Director of Equity Research for North America, Morningstar.
Since 1997, David Holland has built a solid reputation in our local community as an independent financial advisor. Just as important, Holland Financial's professional team has grown to include 3 experienced certified financial planners, a tax accountant, an attorney, 3 chartered financial consultants, accredited asset management specialist, and certified annuity specialist. Our attentive and professional staff gives prompt and accurate service to our 300-plus clients. If you're looking for financial advice you can count on today and for many years to come, call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
Welcome back. Why Moats Matter, The Morningstar Approach to Stock Investing. That's the book. Elizabeth Collins, CFA, the author. The website, Morningstar.com. I wanted to drill a little deeper, if we could, Elizabeth, on this. And I know we're throwing a lot at our listeners and are going, boy, you guys are just having a love fest on this financial stuff. And I want to dig a little deeper on the moats, you know, the how you determine the economic moats and some of the different sources of competitive advantages for company. And I think we hit one of them when we started talking about Amazon, and that was the cost advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess let's use them if you'd like, because I'm a fan of Amazon and I am a customer and I've got their app on my smartphone. I just think it's the coolest thing. Where they have a cost advantage. So what is that is it volume based? How does a company achieve a cost advantage?
Well, they have a much lower cost to deliver goods to you than their retailer competitors that have a physical presence.
Okay.
So bricks and mortars.
Okay.
So and since they're the biggest fulfillment player right now, they have it would take a lot for a competitor to match their scale.
Okay. So the fact that I'm in a big box store with my phone checking Amazon's prices, that's...
Yeah.
Right?
The store doesn't like that.
No, they don't. The next is intangible assets. So this would be goodwill, intellectual property.
Yes. So Amazon, we don't think, benefits much from intangible assets. Intangible assets are things like brands or patents. So you'll see those for consumer products companies or healthcare companies.
Okay. So the technology company, the smartphones, the tablets.
So patents in technology are pretty tricky in terms of whether or not they're moat-worthy. And we don't think that they're as strong for moats as they are in healthcare. And that's because product cycles are so fast in technology.
Okay, well, how about with healthcare? What would be a good example of that?
So anything where a drug has patent protection for an extended period of time is a great source of economic moat.
I got you. So they've got a legal monopoly.
You got it.
Okay, all right. Well, that's good. And then what's this? The next one is called switching costs. What is that?
That means that as a customer, you're not going to defect to a competitor for a small difference in price because you bear some cost of switching.
Okay.
And the discount that you get isn't enough to offset that cost of switching.
So it is the product or service is not considered a commodity. It has an intrinsic, distinct value that sets it apart from its competitors.
Right. So a good example here would be, let's say, Salesforce.com, which is a customer relationship management system. And the idea is that you have to train all your salespeople and sales managers how to use Salesforce.com you probably, if you're the company using it, you probably had some developers customize it a little bit for you. You have loaded all your customer data in there. And if another customer management, relationship management software provider comes along and offers you a slightly lower price, you're gonna shop that against what you know it would take to train all of your sales managers and salespeople who are out on the road. You'd rather have them be out on the road selling things versus learning a new software, and the developer time you'd have to spend in order to re-customize the next software. So you're not going to defect for a small difference in price.
Well, that's a great example, Elizabeth, because we use a contact database management system or CRM with my company to, you know, maintain all the information about clients and our communications and all of that, and a calendar and all of that stuff. And we had somebody recently approach us, and it wasn't a small difference in cost. And I said, not a chance. We're not even going to start the conversation because there's no way we're going to switch. First of all, my technology director would probably kill me. Mm-hmm. And she's sitting about 3 feet from me. And then just the sheer loss of productivity, it's not worth it. You know, there is an old saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I think that's exactly what we're speaking to there. Now, that's interesting because that is a built-in customer loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And then the next one was efficient scale. Give us an example of that and how that works.
The best example here are really geographic monopolies. So think about pipelines, railroads, utilities, airports, situations where you have one show in town and there's no need to build another. So the existing player has the ability to charge nice prices for its services or goods, and there's really no incentive for somebody else to enter the market, because if they did, they'd have to compete on prices with the existing player, and neither of them would generate sufficient profitability.
Interesting. The one that came to mind, which may not be the best example, was Carlos Slim and his monopoly of telephones in Mexico.
There's probably other historic advantages that he had.
Exactly.
That may or may not be going away. Right?
Exactly. That's what I was thinking, is it's probably a lot more to do with than just that aspect. But that's interesting. And then the last one, one of the fifth component that are part of the, you know, figuring out what are economic moats, their competitive advantages, was network effect. So let's look at that.
Sure. Let's think about eBay here, where if you're interested in selling baseball cards or Cabbage Patch Kids or Beanie Babies or stamps, anything that's collectible or rare, you want to go to the platform that has the most potential bidders. And if you're looking to buy antiques or collectible items or other things that are not available at a mass market retailer, you want to go to the platform with the most potential sellers. And that becomes a powerful phenomenon, a virtuous cycle, where the platforms with the most customers attract the most sellers and vice versa, which allows strong companies to get stronger.
Interesting. So that makes sense, and just leveraging that network opportunity. Well, here's another thought I wanted to ask you about, Elizabeth. As we look at these economic moats that are drawn from the competitive advantages of the company, what kind of timetable should we be looking at for the sustainability of the economic moat, for us to pull value from that for the company? Are we talking about next 12 months? Are we talking about 5 years, 10 years, 20 years down the line?
Well, for us to award a narrow moat rating, we say that the economic profits have to be sustainable for at least 10 years. And for us to give a company a wide moat rating, which is even better, we say that the profits have to be sustainable for 20 years or more. A lot of companies can generate, you know, a few years of extraordinary profitability, but ultimately we think that would be competed away, and those are no moat companies to us.
Well, okay, so here's the global question. Here's the big question. How many companies are we talking about that get your quote-unquote wide moat rating that would enable them to have that potential 20-year period? What, are we talking about a handful, or are we talking about a lot of companies?
So we cover 1,500 companies globally, and about 200 of them get our wide moat rating.
Okay, so it's not many.
Nope, we think it's rare, because we think that, you know, capitalism does work, free markets work, and usually most players will end up earning their cost of capital only. And in the end, you know, that's really what allows customers to benefit from having low prices. But there are, you know, a small subset of companies that are able to generate economic profits for the benefit of shareholders for a sustained period of time.
Interesting. So there is real value, and there is real value in research, because sometimes, you know, people will say, and I'm sure you've heard this, Elizabeth, and we hear this out on the street, if you will, about, oh, well, you know, it's all one big, either it's one big crapshoot or it's all rigged. You know, you hear all these things that people, you know, maybe out of frustration or lack of knowledge or whatever the case may be. But there's a real science here, and so I applaud Morningstar's efforts to make this something that everyday people can leverage through your website or working with an advisor. And now you have the book that is also part of this, the Why Moats Matter, the Morningstar Approach to Stock Investing. So I really appreciate your being with us to be able to tackle this, and we've got just a little bit of time left. Any final thoughts on developing a strategy with what we've talked about today that maybe our listeners can take away and leverage for their own personal financial situation?
Identifying companies with moats is only the first half of the game. The next part is making sure that you're buying stocks when they're trading at a discount to what you think the company is truly worth.
Okay, so that makes sense. So once we figure so we're looking for inefficiencies in the market.
Correct.
Okay, because there are arguments that, hey, everything that's known, everything that can be known is known, and everything that is, it's all priced in. It's all baked in. And the underlying assumption here is that that's not necessarily true, and that there are opportunities to buy maybe these companies that have these competitive advantages and catch them, quote unquote, at a time when there is the opportunity presents itself to get in cheaper than it really should be.
Yep.
Interesting.
We don't subscribe to the efficient market theory. We're stock pickers at heart.
Okay. Well, hey, you got to be who you are and true to yourself. I like it. Elizabeth Collins, CFA, Director of Equity Research, North America. Morningstar, Why Moats Matter, the Morningstar Approach to Stock Investing, Morningstar.com. Elizabeth, loved it. Have you back another time.
Thanks. Look forward to it.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.